Fasten your seatbelt, turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Today, once again, the focus of Route 51 is politics as we analyze the results of Wisconsin's September 14th primary elections and look ahead to the November 4th general election contests, including the regional races for the General Assembly and State Senate, the high-profile contest for governor between Democrat Tom Barrett and Republican Scott Walker, also for the U.S. Senate between incumbent Democrat Russ Feingold and Republican businessman Ron Johnson, and for the 7th Congressional District between Republican Sean Duffy and Democrat Julie Lossom. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have two of the best political analysts in the state with us this afternoon. That's my opinion anyway. Kevin Hermaning of the Marathon County Republican Party and John Smart of the Price County Democratic Party. Here in our studio, Kevin Hermaning is a former candidate for Congress and the State Senate and a financial advisor whose office is based in Wausau. Joining us on the telephone, John Smart, a member of the Wisconsin Governor's Commission on the United Nations, a board member of the Wisconsin Alliance for Excellent Schools, and a Democratic Party activist. Will there be an anti-incumbent wave that sweeps out the Democrats, who, after all, are in control of the White House, the Senate, and Congress in Washington, and the Governor's Mansion, Senate, and Assembly in Wisconsin? Or, to paraphrase Mark Twain, are the reports of their demise exaggerated? You can weigh in. We are taking your phone calls live on the air at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Kevin and John, thanks again for being with us today.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Glenn. Good to see you, Kevin, or hear you.
You too, John.
See you on the radio, as Charles Osgood likes to say. Well, today is the day the first part of the national health care reform law took effect. Kids can no longer be denied coverage for pre-existing conditions. There are no more caps or limits on lifetime coverage. Insurance companies can't drop you if you get sick. Parents can carry their children on their policies until the kids reach 26. However, many Democrats, particularly in swing districts, are not exactly rushing to embrace the change that's taking place today, John Smart. Why is that?
Well, I think that it's always a question of local races, and there are certainly Democrats who they feel that they are in very tenuous circumstances, and they're being very cautious about not totally supporting the president's actions on anything. And that's a very typical reaction in a midterm election, I think. I don't see anything unusual about that.
But, you know, when they passed this, it was supposed to be their salvation come November. Here we have the policies beginning to take effect today. Yet on this very day, John Boehner and the Republicans in Congress are releasing a pledge to America promising to repeal the new health care law. Kevin Hermaning, do you think that's intelligent strategy on the part of the Republicans? Do you think it'll pay dividends?
Well, I think it's an intelligent strategy, but I also think it's long overdue and very much needed. Of course, it is about a 3 or 4 year process, and so the Republicans can't just come in and overturn the law. After all, any legislation has to be signed by the president. Barack Obama is not going to sign legislation undoing his cornerstone of his political leadership so far. But I think it's because the political leaders thought that, particularly the Democrats in Congress and the Senate, as well as the president and his advisors, believed that the American people were not going to look at the cost of things. And that's why there's opposition. Anytime you expand free government services or force something on the private sector, the costs are almost always going to be unbearable unless people can see a real benefit. What kind of a system is it where we're going to now allow people to be covered up to the age of 26 as a dependent? Unless you're disabled or have an extraordinary circumstance, it seems unusual to me, at least, and I think to most people listening to this broadcast, as well as most of the people in in the United States, to think that you should still be a dependent when you're age 26.
Well, a conservative media outlet, the Washington Examiner, published an editorial yesterday with the title, "Obamacare is Even Worse Than Critics Thought." And their points, it won't cut health care costs for the government, it won't allow employees and small businesses to keep the coverage they have, it increases insurance premiums, it imposes a non-medical tax compliance burden on small business, and allows the IRS to confiscate your tax refund if you don't if you don't buy an insurance policy. John Smart, first of all, what's wrong with that analysis? And second of all, if it's not wrong, no wonder Democrats are running from it.
I think that we should go back to what you said when you introduced this subject, Glenn, and that is the fact that actually today is about the first time that any part of this bill is becoming effective. And I don't think anybody has any kind of a clue as to what it's going to be. As for myself, I wish that the bill had been a great deal more than it is. I think that we should have gone in the direction of Medicare for all, but this is as far as the bill could go, and I can accept that. But I think that to start throwing darts at it before we even know what it's going to actually accomplish, I think is kind of silly. I just don't think that we are in a position yet to know. And as far as supporting people who until they're 26 years old on their parents' policy, I don't find that very strange at all. If you took a poll around the nation today, how many 23, 24, 25, 26-year-olds are still living at home because there's no place else for them to go, and there's no jobs for them, and I think that that's the problem. And I think that the Republicans to now say that we shouldn't spend money that we don't have is kind of crazy when you consider that we're in the situation we're in because they spent so much money that we didn't have.
Well, Kevin, kids can no longer be denied coverage for pre-existing conditions. No more caps or limits on lifetime coverage. Insurance companies can't drop you if you get sick. You got to be crazy to run a campaign saying you're going to repeal that stuff.
It's
going to appeal to a lot of people.
Glenn, you know, some of the things you just mentioned are things that have been common ground among Republicans as well as Democrats, certainly Tea Party folks in large measure, and a lot of independents. The repeal of the Obamacare legislation, when Congressman Boehner and the other Republicans like Paul Ryan and others talk about repeal of Obamacare, they're talking about the worst aspects of it. They're talking about, and something that John just mentioned, the idea that we would have a Medicare system for all Americans, in my view, is absurd. One of the least effective, least cost-efficient programs in the United States. It doesn't mean it doesn't do great things for the people who rely on it and need it, but we have to get to the point, what can we afford as a nation? And until the American people are willing to step forward and say, this is a program or the other is a program that we're willing to financially pay for, I think we have to go backward in some of the and get rid of some of the things that they're trying to now put down our throats. As a small business owner who has a health care program for his employees, who pays for the premium as well as helps to fund their health savings accounts, if John thinks that nothing has happened until today, or if you do, I beg to differ. We have already seen our premiums go up because our insurance company has gotten ready for this age 26 thing as long as 4 months ago when it passed, 3.5 months ago when it passed. And we've already received those notices, and our premiums did go up in part because of that.
Well, we've also heard that insurance companies are canceling child-only policies to avoid having to cover kids with pre-existing conditions. John, I'd like you to comment on how the insurance companies are reacting to this.
Well, I have a very bad feeling about insurance companies in general, but you just pointed that out, Glenn, that insurance companies are now dropping children's coverage, period, especially if there's a pre-existing condition. So kids with asthma or whatever, you know, are suddenly not going to even be allowed to be on their parents' policy, which is crazy. I mean, this is overreaction by the insurance industry. The insurance industry has made record profits over the last couple of years, and now they're using this fear of the new healthcare program in order to raise premiums even more, as Kevin just pointed out. And I think that that's absolutely insane. I could tell lots of stories about insurance companies and why I feel the way about them. I do, but to cut this a little bit shorter, I remember I had open heart surgery, and I was speaking to my cardiac surgeon, and I said, just out of curiosity, a couple of days after my surgery, I said, what do you think about insurance companies? He said, I just spent an hour and a half on the phone this morning with a woman in Omaha, Nebraska, who was trying to convince me that one of my patients, did not need the cardiac surgery that I had promoted. And he said, I asked her where she got her medical training, and she said, I didn't study medicine, I studied statistics. And that, to me, kind of encapsulates what I think is the problem with insurance companies. And I would like to, as I said before, I would like to get rid of them altogether. And I think that it would be a very much healthier situation if we did indeed do that.
You know, a lot of people work for insurance companies in Wausau.
I understand.
States are suing the federal government, claiming the individual mandate is unconstitutional.
Not Wisconsin.
The Attorney General wanted to.
And he should be allowed to.
Do you feel the individual mandate is unconstitutional, Kevin?
I actually do, because I think that when you look at the 10th Amendment, as well as other parts of the Constitution, a person has to acknowledge that the government never before has been allowed to force anyone to purchase anything that they may not want.
How about Social Security? I mean, the government forces you to take out what is, you know, for all practical purposes, old age insurance. And they actually deduct the money right from your paycheck to pay for it. I mean, if an individual mandate is unconstitutional, surely Social Security is unconstitutional.
Social Security is a tax program, first and foremost. It's the way that our government had decided back in 1936 to protect the truly aged, the people unable to work. It was set up when the average life expectancy was age 62. You couldn't even collect it until 65. Now, I'm not going to argue here today the merits or lack of merit of the Social Security system, but quite frankly, if we had a system that kept pace with longevity and life expectancy over the last 74 years since it started, today you couldn't start collecting Social Security benefits until age 81.
But this is a tax system too, the individual mandate. It's all enforced through the income tax system. The government has the power to tax. So if
you're right,
If you don't have an insurance policy, you pay a tax penalty. If you have one, you pay lower taxes.
And
that's how it's going to be defended.
That is the way that the Democrats are trying to defend it. And quite frankly, I think the American people are looking at the Ponzi scheme Social Security system that we presently do have set up. And they're saying, we don't want another one of these because we can't afford yet another mandate on the average American middle class worker.
John Smarty,
just lives on Social Security. I would like to defend the program. It's a very important program.
Yes, it is.
Also,
I agree.
If we had a Medicare for all, as I said before, we would be in an entirely different situation as far as world the world business is concerned. We are behind the rest of the world because we are in a problem situation with paying for health care. Every other industrialized nation in the world, from China to Great Britain, has got public health care, and we're the only ones who don't. And we are suffering in comparison to those countries.
In what areas are we suffering, John?
We're suffering because it costs us so much more to make everything. I forget the statistics, but somebody said an American-made car, and there was X percentage of the amount of the cost of the car when somebody goes to buy it is to cover the insurance that the corporations have to pay for health care for their employees.
So it sounds odd, but it sounds to me like if you were a capitalist, you think that based in the current system, you would favor outsourcing of automobile manufacturing to the lowest common denominator in China. I know
No.
You're not advocating that, but that's what it sounds like.
No, I certainly am not. I'm saying that we should make ourselves competitive by supplying the necessary health care so that it doesn't get added onto the cost of manufactured goods.
I want to focus on the elections for the rest of the program, but I thought it was important to bring up health care because today is the day that it goes into effect, and it is also being used as a campaign issue by many Republican candidates, including Ron Johnson, running for the U.S. Senate, who Kevin Hermaning also used that phrase Ponzi scheme. To
that
describe Social
Security.
Right. John Smart, is Social Security a Ponzi scheme? And if not, explain why it's not.
I guess that would depend on your definition of what a Ponzi scheme is.
Well, let's use Bernie Madoff's definition.
I think himself would probably be astonished that we're even using his name.
But let's use the Bernie Madoff definition of it.
Very funny.
It wasn't intended to be.
Well, it's a joke, I think, isn't it, Kevin?
It wasn't intended to be. He took people from.
Are you telling me that you think that Social Security is a Ponzi scheme like Bernie Madoff had?
Yes, I am.
Then I totally and completely disagree with you.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation on politics with Kevin Hermaning, Marathon County Republican, and John Smart, a Price County Democrat. When we continue, we will pick up the conversation about Social Security and also look at the 7th District Congressional race between Republican Sean Duffy and Democrat Julie Lassa. right here on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, right after this break.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at UMR.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. If you'd like to comment on the political races that North Central Wisconsin will be voting on November 4th, the political climate across the country, the situation right now with the Republicans issuing a pledge to America which calls for the abolition of President Obama's health care reform. Our lines are open, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Our guests, Kevin Hermaning, Republican, and John Smart, a Democrat. In the 7th Congressional District race, Republican Sean Duffy insists that he will not privatize Social Security, although he says that we do have to look at options and see if we can fix the problem. But Kevin, if you really want to make sure Social Security isn't privatized, don't you have to vote against all Republicans running for Congress, since their leader John Boehner says that privatization is on the table if they take control in November?
Well, I think any responsible elected official in office or those running for office, whether they are a Republican or a Democrat, need to look at all prospective changes to current social, economic, military, you name it, educational programs. It doesn't mean that any one program should be exempt from at least being considered regarding some changes. The original Social Security law in 1935 was passed with an overwhelming majority of Democrats and Republicans voting for it. 81 out of the 115 Republicans voted for Social Security. When it was set up, it truly was a social safety net program. Now it has become a different type of program, and that's what the American people are afraid might happen with the health care bill.
But once again, you know, if you're really against privatization, don't you have to vote against all the Republicans? Because it's John Boehner who's saying it's on the table.
It should be on the table because there are younger people, a lot of younger people, 25-year-olds, 35-year-olds, 45-year-olds, who are just yearning to take advantage of opportunities to invest their own money. People like John and the other.
Again, that you're a financial advisor, yeah, so you have some experience in this.
But I have no vested interest in it, quite frankly.
Correct.
And let me just share that people like John and others who might be listening, and folks like Julie Lassa, talk about the Social Security system as though it's some financially solvent plan. It is a system that is going broke, depending on who you listen to the commissioners, to independent economists, from liberal as well as conservative think tanks, as well as independent ones. The system will be broke in anywhere between 6 and 31 years. And we have to worry about that. We can't wait until it's too late before we wrap our arms around the economic challenges we're facing as a nation.
John Smart, Julie Loss is trying to pin privatization on Sean Duffy. He says it's not the case. He has never advocated it. And a number of local media outlets, including the Wausau Daily Herald, say that's an unfair charge. Do you think she's got any basis to making that charge, and do you think that she might be able to make it stick?
Well, the basis of the charge is the fact that Sean Duffy has announced publicly that he is in favor of Congressman Ryan's plan, and Congressman Ryan in his plan talks about privatizing Social Security along with a lot of other things. And I just wanted to bring up, as far as privatization of Social Security, once again, I'm on Social Security and I really like it.
Remain on it, John.
I hope so.
Nobody in office today,
all right,
nor
let me,
running
let me,
for...
Let me finish what I was going to say, Kevin, just a minute. They were trying to privatize it 10 years ago, and if it had happened and they had indeed invested the money that was in the Social Security Trust Fund at that point, if they had invested it on Wall Street, which is what the Republicans in Congress wanted to do, the whole fund would be broke now and I wouldn't be getting any checks every month. So I'm very concerned about what happens with that program.
That's an absurd statement. Never did President Bush's proposal. John, never did President Bush's proposal, and the one put forward as far back as the 1970s by Daniel Patrick Moynihan, your beloved senator from New York State, ever suggest that current monies of current retirees or those within the next 15 years about to retire would be invested inside of the stock market or Wall Street. No one ever suggested that, and to suggest that way is a falsehood. I hope, quite frankly, that State Senator Julie Lassa, candidate challenging Sean Duffy, continues to beat this drum. She's beating herself out of an election in November because it's a losing issue from her chair.
Kevin, John asked how, or rather, John, Kevin asked, how are we going to solve the mess with Social Security? How are we going to make it solvent? Here's one proposal for both of you. Why don't we just eliminate the payroll tax cap so that millionaires have to pay the same percentage of their income for Social Security taxes that somebody making $20,000 a year has to pay?
I think that should have happened a long time ago, to be perfectly frank. Yes, I think that's a fact.
As far as I'm concerned, I think that that should be on the table. John Boehner's pledge talks about it being on the table. Quite frankly, you want the real statistics. That will extend its likelihood of succeeding by an extra 2.5 years, and that's all. There isn't enough money in that extra payroll tax of 6.2% on the millionaires, the people. Actually, it's about $115,000. Anybody above that paying more in Social Security tax isn't going to extend it a wit of beans.
1-800.
I question your figures on that, Kevin.
I understand.
I go back to a report that the late Senator Paul Wellstone drew up when he was studying this issue, and he disagreed with that totally.
Well, okay.
1-800-780-9742. I wanted to take Matt, who is on the road right now, but we only have about 40 seconds before a news break. So, Matt, please hang on. We'll take you right after we break for the news. We are talking about the elections that just wrapped up September 14th, the primary elections, and we have some interesting races to talk about. Incumbent Democratic Senator Russ Feingold trailing Republican challenger and businessman Ron Johnson in the polls by as much as 6 to 7 points. We have Scott Walker ahead of Tom Barrett, not quite by that significant a margin. And we have what some people are calling a Republican wave that's about to sweep the Democrats out of office. What do you think? 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. I'll be back with Kevin Hermaning and John Smart on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio after this news. We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. The subject today, politics, with Marathon County Republican Kevin Hermaning and Price County Democrat John Smart. We're taking your calls at 1-800-780-9742, and we have Matthew, who has been on the road and waiting patiently. Matthew, you're on Route 51.
Thank you, Glenn. Wonderful show. Appreciate your guests. Congressman Obey is leaving office, and he was a champion of young people's issues, college students, loans, grants, TRIO, Upward Bound. I'm curious how your two guests view Sean Duffy and Julie Lassa in that perspective. And one additional piece to that is the health care bill, where young people will now be allowed to stay on their parents' coverage. I'm not sure of the candidate's view on that, but I bet a lot of college students would be curious to hear the perspective on that and appreciate the program and have a great show.
All right. Thank you, Matthew. Now, Kevin, you've already said that you think insurance premiums are going up because of that, but I want to move to John Smart and ask him to answer the bulk of the question, which is Julie Lassa compared to Dave Obey. And what Matthew said was Dave Obey's support for many progressive initiatives in the 7th Congressional District. How does she stack up?
Well, it would be pretty hard to compare anybody to Dave Obey as far as I'm concerned. Dave Obey is my personal hero and a longtime family friend, and I feel very close to Dave. And I have always been proud that he was from my district. I wrote a column recently that said Dave Obey is not replaceable, and I don't think he is. And I don't think that Julie, as much as I like her and respect her, I don't think she's a replacement for Dave Obey, because I don't think there could be such a thing. But I think that I wrote a column about this, and I said that Sean Duffy is a very interesting character. He's a very handsome young man. He's got his background on television shows and various things. But I kind of compared him to Julie by saying, do you want a show horse or a workhorse? Julie has been a workhorse in the state legislature. She has been responsible for a lot of important legislation, and Dave was not, that's what he was looking at, Dave Obey, when he endorsed Julie's running for this office. And that's why I'm supporting Julie. She's a terrific lady, And she's a farm girl, and she understands the basic part of being a Wisconsinite from this part of the state. And I just think that she's, as I said, I would prefer a workhorse to a show horse in this case.
Kevin Hermaning?
Well, it'll be an interesting next 4.5, 5 weeks, of course, till the election. I think that Sean Duffy has already demonstrated his willingness and ability to work hard on behalf of taxpayers in the state of Wisconsin in Ashland County as the DA, as well as Senator Lassa as a state senator. But I also think that Sean Duffy certainly additionally represents the values of central Wisconsin and northern Wisconsin. Both of them have their roots here. I think it's great that Julie is a farm girl. Saying that, though, John, makes it sound as though if you're not a farm girl or a farm person, that you don't have the same types of roots in central Wisconsin or northern Wisconsin. I think they're both hard workers, and the voters of our district are going to have to make a philosophical decision about who they want as their next congressperson.
Well, one way Lassa is breaking with Obie, she's running as a deficit hawk. Whereas Dave Obie famously said, so what, when people asked him how much the stimulus was going to cost the deficit. She says she wants a balanced budget. She says also that Washington is the problem. Now, she defines Washington as big business and big corporations, but it almost sounds like a Republican rhetoric in some respects coming from her campaign. She's also pledging to change free trade agreements like NAFTA, which she says have cost Wisconsin workers jobs. Is she trying to latch on to some of this Tea Party anger? And does she have a point there? You know, there are a lot of people who say those free trade agreements have put our manufacturing base and a lot of workers in the position that we're in right now.
Well, I haven't seen Julie Lassa at any tea parties as one of the guest or invited speakers. It would have been helpful if she had been, because then people might have actually been able to believe some of the rhetoric that's coming out of her mouth on this topic. I think the fact of the matter is that she maybe isn't aware that she is and has been an integral part of the huge budget deficit that Madison is facing, that our state is facing, over $2.7 billion at this point in time. Plus, the state went out with her encouragement and endorsement and borrowed another $2.5 million from the feds for unemployment benefit extensions. The state doesn't have these kinds of funds, and I hope that she's going to have an opportunity to undo what she's helped to create by returning to Madison and incorporating some of this conservative rhetoric as a state senator next January as they work on the state budget.
I'm talking specifically about the anger that she's directing against Washington, but she's not directing it so much against the federal government as saying that the government has been corrupted by big business and big corporations and by Wall Street. John Smart, do you think she's got a point?
I'm not sure how you're coming to that conclusion, Glenn. A lot of what she is talking about has to do with the fact that accepting the situation as it is now, she's not going back and saying we should have done this, we should have done that. She's basically talking about how do we proceed from here into the future. And an awful lot of the things that have happened, whether it be the stimulus package or whatever else, is already that's over and done with, and we can argue it until the cows come home, but we're not going to have any kind of a result out of that. And I don't think that Julie is talking about that. I don't think she's talking about how things should have been done differently. She's a great fan of Dave Obie's, and I, as we all are, and I don't think that she was in any way meaning to imply that he in any way was on the wrong side of this.
I don't think that Julie Lassa has met a political position that Dave Obie has ever opposed.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got a couple of callers on right now. Let's go to Dave in Wausau. Dave, you're on Route 51 with Kevin Hermaning and John Smart.
Well, a very happy Thursday to you.
Thank you.
Hey, look, this is a kind of a philosophical thing about economics. Okay, if I make a paycheck, anyone makes a paycheck, whose money is it? And the point, I guess maybe I'm thinking about ownership, so help me through this. If I'm supposed to have the rewards of my labor, where's the boundaries when someone else tells me, no, you need to give this somewhere else? So I'm asking here these two gentlemen, they're asked, they're physicians, on, look, if I earn a paycheck, do I get to have control of it? Because to me, that's the essence of freedom and liberty.
And Kevin Hermaning?
Well, certainly, I believe that you need to give to Caesar what Caesar is asking for and render to him. Caesar is our government, but the big philosophical question is, to what extent should you have to render unto Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and Barack Obama and Jim Doyle? I think people feel that they've been asked to give too much for too little reward, and that's why we're having tea parties. That's why there are Americans going to the polls in droves in primaries to a much greater degree than ever before. And I think Glenn read from his comments earlier that it appears there may be a tidal wave sweeping Democrats out of office in just 5.5 weeks. I think that is true. Republicans are going to be given, I think, a last chance, quite frankly, a final opportunity to prove that the overspending from 2000 until 2008, 2008 was too excessive for the average American.
John Smart, let's have you answer Dave's question. You have a paycheck. How much of it is yours? How much of it is the government's? And is the extent to which it's yours, as Dave is arguing, is that really the essence of freedom?
Well, there's a very wise saying that taxes are the dues we pay to live in a civilized society, and that's a fact.
That's Oliver Wendell Holmes.
Right. And it certainly is true.
And it is true.
Absolutely, it's true. The question is to whether or not we can afford to pay for the things that we want. Now, Kevin was just talking about that, but I would point out to Kevin and to everybody listening that the problem that we're dealing with on a national level was put in place essentially by the last 8 years. Kevin mentioned that himself. We put in the Medicare Part D drug program, which I am taking part in and I'm very pleased about.
And you're not paying your fair share, by the way.
To be paid for. Nobody ever planned to pay for that. And the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan were put off the books. They were paid for by supplemental appropriations. They were never put into the tax code, which means that essentially we were borrowing money to run those wars. We were borrowing money to pay Medicare Part D plan
from China,
and instead of actually coming up with the money to do it. Now all of a sudden the Republicans are saying, yeah, but you know, we can't do this stuff unless we figure out how we're going to pay for it. Well, where the hell have they been the last 10 years?
They've been fighting the Democrats in the U.S. Senate.
Dave in Wausau, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's go back to the phones. Jim and Rothschild, you're on Route 51. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Glenn.
Your question or comment?
According to the polls, a lot of people don't trust either one of the major parties to solve the problems that are faced by the nation. And you've been talking a lot about the problems in Washington. And
I think we have a candidate on the phone here. This is Jim Moss, the Libertarian candidate for the 85th Assembly District. Jim, your
Hi,
question
Kevin.
For our guests.
Hello, Jim.
All the publicity we have is about the national contest, the people who want to go to Washington, people don't trust either party to represent them anymore, and we don't trust Washington, and so I'm hoping that we can. Wisconsin can do something to turn it around and protect ourselves from the unsustainable spending and programs and wars that Washington has got us into. And I'm just wondering if the representatives of the two old parties have noticed the discontent.
Jim, what do you call them? You call them Republicrats and Democrats?
Yeah, we don't. We often call them Republicrats because whether we vote in one party or the other, it seems like the government gets bigger and more expensive, and it doesn't make any difference.
All right, Jim Moss, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's go to Kevin first.
You know, just very quickly, I think we are actually seeing a movement in some parts of the state, and even I'm sure elsewhere in the nation, though I'm not following it, where there may be at least one independent, or I should say non-major party candidate winning their election. It certainly is in the direction that I would have preferred that the district go, but Spencer Black's seat may actually go in the direction of a Green candidate this fall, which is kind of interesting.
And John Smart, do you think there's a place for Libertarians on the right and Green Party candidates on the left?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I would encourage people from different perspectives to come into the system. I'm not at all convinced that a two-party system is the be-all and end-all and that we need to focus on that. On the other hand, I lived and worked in Italy for a while, and they have 60 or 70 political parties, and it gets very confusing when you're doing something like that, too.
It's pretty dysfunctional.
But I think that people tend to assume that if you belong to a political party, whether it be Republican or Democrat or whatever, that you automatically ascribe to everything that political party says. And obviously that's not the case. People are in all different directions on these things. And I think that there's nothing we can really do about changing that. And if we had 50 or 60 different political parties like the Italians do, I think we would have as inconclusive a government as the Italians usually do.
We're going to take a quick break. We've got Democrat John Smart and Kevin Hermaning on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg, back with more and your phone calls after this.
Join us Thursday night for a live legislative call-in forum with the candidates in the 87th Assembly District, Athens Democrat Dana Schultz, excellent independent Frank Rutherford, and incumbent Medford Republican Mary Williams. We start right after Route 51 Thursday night at 6 on the Ideas Network.
Let's start talking about some of the races. Kevin, you were a candidate for the state Senate on the Republican side in the race to the Republicans would like to replace Senate Majority Leader Russ Decker, who has served for a long time. He represents the Wausau area. Comment on Pam Galloway and Russ Decker. What do you think she needs to do to unseat him?
Well, Pam Galloway is an excellent candidate with a real-world work experience life and has dedicated her life's work to helping people in the healthcare field. She is a strong volunteer in our community with a variety of organizations, and she shares my political philosophy of smaller government, lower taxes, and the creation of private sector jobs. The government doesn't really create jobs. The government there are government jobs, certainly, but the government itself can never create a real private sector job. Good government policy can. And Senator Decker, who is a career politician for the last 20 years, has really been instrumental and an integral part of creating the bloated government bureaucracy in Madison that is made our state broke. And our state is one of the worst in the nation when it comes to the percentage of jobs which have been lost. And when we look at a per person deficit in our state, Wisconsin's is worse even than the state of California by every objective measure, including studies done by the Washington Post.
John Smart, what can Russ Decker do to survive a climate in which incumbents are being targeted and removed from office?
Well, I just think that the whole idea of targeting incumbents for the mere fact that they've been there for a while is kind of a mistake. And it would be interesting to use Dr. Galloway as an example. I mean, people go to Dr. Galloway because she's an expert on breast cancer. That's the idea. You wouldn't say, well, she's been there too long. She's been dealing with breast cancer for such a long time. I'm going to go to a new doctor who's fresh out of medical school instead. That doesn't make sense. This whole notion that we go after people like they've been going after Dave Obey for years. The fact that he's been there too long. Well, what does that mean?
It means he's entrenched and they spend too much money. You don't
he doesn't,
have to.
Though.
You
That's,
don't.
Now wait, Kevin. Let me finish. No, I don't think so. And I it's just a question of whether or not we want to throw Russ Decker out, for example, simply because he's been there for too long. I don't think so.
That's not what I said.
He's been representing the people of this district very well for a very long time, and I hope that he will continue to do so.
He's also a bricklayer. Can labor help him survive in
November?
Every
time he comes to Park Falls and speaks in our high school auditorium, he points up and says, I laid some of the bricks in this auditorium. I want you to know that. And it means a great deal, of course.
Let's move on to the Senate race between Ron Johnson and Russ Feingold. And we are very excited here at Wisconsin Public Radio to be co-sponsoring a debate with the Wausau Daily Herald and WAOW-TV, WSAW-TV, the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, between Russ Feingold and Ron Johnson. It's October 11th here at UW Marathon County. This is the attack that Ron Johnson is using against Russ Feingold. He's a career politician, even though Feingold has developed a reputation as being a maverick. Is that fair?
Voting.
Who are you asking?
I'm asking, we'll start with John.
Okay. As a matter of fact, yes. I think that's kind of crazy. That's once again, you know, to anybody in Washington, if you said that Russ Feingold was a career politician and a Washington insider, they would laugh at you. I mean, Russ Feingold, of all people, is certainly not a Washington insider. And that whole argument is just kind of nuts. And as far as a debate, as you mentioned before, I can only say I hope that Ron Johnson shows up this time, because he didn't show up for a debate in Eau Claire where he was supposed to debate the senator.
Kevin Hermaning, Ron Johnson, Russ Feingold.
You know, the idea that the Tea Party folks, the conservatives, the Republicans, and the independents are wanting to throw people out merely because they're career politicians, I think is absurd. There is a small percentage of people who feel that way, very small in my estimation. It's what the career politicians have done to our government, done to our tax base, done to our society, done to our infrastructure, by ignoring some of the real needs and the creating of the private sector jobs, that is unnerving people in this political climate. We have runaway unemployment. If we went back to the late 1970s and looked at the Jimmy Carter misery index numbers, the misery index here in the United States, except for inflation, is looking pretty miserable. And the American people, once every couple of years, rise up and say, we want to take control of our government back. And that's what they're doing this year. Senator Feingold, I actually saw him and shook his hand a couple of weeks ago in Mosinee at a non-political event. He looks tired.
Tom Barrett and Scott Walker, we've got two people from the Milwaukee area trying to get name recognition as they run for governor in the rest of the state. I'm going to stick with you, Kevin, your analysis of that race.
Very close. The attack ads are terrible. They're going back and forth. But I think that the people of the state of Wisconsin, just like the people of the United States, are looking to change direction in Madison from what we've had for the last 8 years.
John Smart, your analysis of Tom Barrett and Scott Walker.
Very interesting that Scott Walker is going around the state talking about Wisconsin as though we were the only place in the world that was suffering an economic setback. And I think that's just incredibly interesting and funny, as I said. But I heard him here in Park Falls. His brown paper bag express, or whatever he calls it, pulled up here in Park Falls. And a group of us from the Price County Democrats were out carrying signs around and outside his periphery area, saying, vote for Tom Barrett, of course. But he was going on and on about how, oh, yeah, we got to be careful now. You know, this is really terrible. And I just don't understand what he's talking about. I think he's just kind of lost it.
Walker and Barrett, both from the Milwaukee area, but they're on different sides of one issue, the high-speed rail system linking Madison and Milwaukee with $810 million of stimulus money. Walker says he'd cancel the project. Kevin Hermaning, does that mean that he'd go up to the construction sites and tell all the guys in the hard hats to go home? They're out of work because he's not in favor of the project?
Well, it's not entirely up to him, but he's hoping to have a Republican legislature in both houses that will not fund it. And we are trying to spend money the state and the federal government doesn't have.
So you're going to put all those people out of work who are building that high-speed rail?
It's a temporary government program.
$800-plus million of temporary program.
It's money we don't have.
Would you?
And we don't need it.
Would
it's
you
part
have
of
a
the stimulus plan?
So it's and quite frankly, the stimulus program from President Obama and the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi and Barney Frank and Harry Reid and the rest, it hasn't created any jobs. It hasn't created
it has,
any
Kevin,
stimulus.
Come on, you know,
and we all
that.
Know that the government can't create jobs. We need a good environment that fosters private sector work.
The government didn't create jobs when it built the interstate highway system during the Eisenhower years, when it built the Transcontinental Railroad under President Lincoln.
And how many of
the
those
NASA
people? And
moon
how many
project?
Of those people are still building those particular highways?
So we should stop building highways. Is that right, Kevin?
No, I didn't say that at all.
I wish we could continue this forever, guys, but our time
enjoyed it.
Is rapidly coming to a close. John Smart, Kevin Hermaning, thanks so much. We want to thank both of our guests, Kevin Hermaning of the Marathon County Republican Party, John Smart of the Price County Democratic Party. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Coming up on Route 51 next Thursday, September 30th, coming up on Route 51, we've got the three candidates for the General Assembly in the Wausau-based 85th District, incumbent Democrat Donna Seidel, Republican Chuck Eno, and a guy who called the show just a few minutes ago, Libertarian Jim Moss. Now, a reminder also, the evening of Monday, October 11th, here at UW Marathon County, that's the debate between Russ Feingold and Ron Johnson right here in Wausau, with questions posed by panelists from the Wausau Daily Herald, Channel 9, and Channel 7. Route 51 can be heard every Thursday at 5 and on the Ideas Network stations in north central Wisconsin. Reminder, stay tuned for the 87th Assembly Forum. Thanks again for riding with us today. Until next week, we are heading out of town.